Fool's Mate. Umkhono, South Africa, January 1989. The heat from the early morning sun made itself felt as two men gently slipped the cradle ropes through their hands and lowered the wooden box to the floor of the grave. Then the ropes were pulled free, making a soft rustling sound as they snaked around the sharp, unsanded edges of the coffin. "Sure you don't want me to fill it in?" asked an ebony-skinned gravedigger as he coiled the rope around a sinewy shoulder. "Thanks, I'll take care of it," Pitt said, holding out several South African rand notes. "No pay," said the gravedigger. "The captain was a friend. I could dig 100 graves and never repay the kindness he rained upon my family when he was alive." Pitt nodded in understanding. "I'll borrow your shovel." The digger obliged, shook Pitt's hand vigorously, and flashed an enormous smile. Then, with a wave, he set foot over a narrow path that led from the cemetery to the village. Pitt looked around. The landscape was lush but harsh. Steam from the damp undergrowth wisped above the plants as the sun rose higher in the sky. He rubbed a sleeve over his sweat-soaked forehead and stretched out under a mimosa tree, studying its blossoming yellow fluffy balls and long white thorns, and listening to the honking of hornbills in the distance. Then he turned his attention back to the large granite stone sitting at the head of the gravesite. "Here lie the family Fox, Patrick McKenzie, Myrna Clarissa, Patrick McKenzie Jr., Jennifer Louise, joined together for all eternity, 1988. A prophetic man, the captain, Pitt thought. The stone had been carved in its entirety months before Fox's death on board the Iowa. He brushed away a vagrant ant and dozed for the next 2 hours. He was awakened by the sound of a car. The uniformed driver, a sergeant, braked the Bentley, slipped from behind the wheel, and opened the rear door. Colonel Joris Zegler stepped out, followed by Defense Minister Peter Duval.
"Seems peaceful enough," said Duval.
"This sector has been quiet since the Fox Massacre," Zegler replied. "I believe the grave is this way, sir." Pitt rose to his feet and brushed himself off as they approached. "It was good of you gentlemen to come so far," he said, extending his hand.
"No great effort, I assure you," Duval said arrogantly. He ignored Pitt's outstretched hand and sat irreverently on the Fox headstone.
By coincidence, Colonel Zegler had arranged an inspection tour of Northern Natal Province. A short detour, a brief stop-off in the schedule, no harm done.
"This won't take long," said Pitt, casually checking his dark glasses for smudges.
"Did you know Captain Fox?"
"I appreciate the fact your rather strange request to meet me in a rural cemetery came down from high sources in your government, but I want it understood that I'm here out of courtesy, not to answer questions."
"Understood," Pitt said.
"Yes, I once met Captain Fox." Duval gazed into space. "Back in October, I believe it was. Soon after his family were murdered, I expressed my condolences on behalf of the Defense Ministry."
"Did he accept your offer to command the raid on Washington?"
Duval didn't bat an eye. "Pure rot. The man was mentally unbalanced by the death of his wife and children. He planned and conducted the raid entirely on his own."
"Did he?"
"My position and rank do not have to tolerate rudeness." Duval came to his feet. "Good day, Mr. Pitt." Pitt let him walk nearly 20 feet before he said, "Operation Wild Rose, Minister. Our intelligence people knew about it almost from the beginning."
Duval stopped in mid-stride, turned, and looked at Pitt.
"They knew?"
He walked back until he was standing face to face with the man from Numa.
"They knew about Wild Rose?"
"That shouldn't surprise you, of all people," Pitt said affably. "After all, it was you who leaked it to them."
Duval's haughty composure cracked, and he looked to Zegler for support. The colonel's eyes were unblinking, and his face was as hard as stone.
"Preposterous," Duval said. "You're making a wild accusation based on the wind."
"I admit to a few holes in the net," said Pitt. "But I came into the game late. A neat scheme, and whatever the outcome, you won, Minister.
The plan was never meant to succeed. Blaming the AAR for the raid in order to drum up sympathy for the South African white minority was a smokescreen. The real purpose was to embarrass and topple Prime Minister Kurtzman's party so the Defense Ministry could have an excuse for stepping in with the new military government headed by none other than Peter de Waal. "Why are you doing this?" de Waal said savagely. "What do you hope to gain?" "I don't like to see traitors prosper," Pitt retorted. "Incidentally, how much did you and Emma salt away? $3, $4, $5 million? "You're chasing shadows, Pitt. Colonel Zeigler here can tell you. Emma was a paid agent for the AAR. Emma sold doctored reports from your defense ministry files to any black revolutionary sucker enough to pay for them and split the take with you. A most lucrative side venture, de Waal." "I do not have to stand here and listen to this garbage," the minister hissed. He nodded at Zeigler and gestured toward the waiting Bentley. Zeigler did not move. "I'm sorry, Minister, but I think Mr. Pitt should be heard out." De Waal was nearly choking with rage. "You have served me for 10 years, Joris. You well know I punish insubordination to the extreme." "I'm aware of that, sir, but I think we should stay, particularly in light of the circumstances." Zeigler pointed toward a black man who was threading his way between the gravestones. He wore a grim, determined face and was dressed in the uniform of the AAR. A long, curved Moroccan knife was gripped loosely in one hand. "The fourth actor in the drama," said Pitt. "Permit me to introduce Thomas Machita, the new leader of the African Army of Revolution." Though the minister's entourage carried no weapons, Zeigler stood unconcerned. De Waal spun and shouted to his chauffeur while gesturing wildly at Machita. "Sergeant, shoot him! For God's sake, shoot him!" The sergeant looked through De Waal as though the minister were transparent. De Waal turned to Zeigler, his eyes sick with a mounting fear. "Joris, what goes on?" Zeigler did not answer. His face was an emotionless void. Pitt pointed into the open grave. "It was Captain Fawkes who blew the whistle on your shifty act. He may have been unhinged by the death of his family and blinded by revenge, but it struck him that he had been horribly and pitifully duped when you sent Emma to kill him. A necessary part of your plan. Captured alive, he might have revealed your direct involvement. Also, you couldn't take the chance he could somehow become wise that it was you who masterminded the attack on his farm." "No," the word scratched from de Waal's throat. "Captain Patrick Mackenzie Fawkes was the only man in South Africa who could pull off Wild Rose. You ordered the murders of his wife and children, knowing a grief-stricken man would seek retribution. The massacre was a stroke of cunning. Even your own people at the ministry were at a loss to connect the raiders with any known insurgent organization. It never dawned on them their boss sneaked in a team of black mercenaries from Angola." De Waal's eyes registered stunned desperation. "How is it possible you know all this?" "Like any good intelligence officer, Colonel Zeigler kept investigating until he ran down the truth," Pitt said. "Also, as do most sea captains, Fawkes kept a log. I was there when Emma tried to kill him. Fawkes saved my life before the ship blew up, but not before inserting his log, along with a few added notes about you, into a watertight tobacco pouch and slipping it under my shirt. The pages made damned interesting reading, especially to the president and the director of the NSA. By the way," Pitt continued, "that phony message you sent implicating Prime Minister Kurtzman was never really taken at face value. The White House was satisfied that Operation Wild Rose was conceived and conducted behind his back. Thus, your oily scheme to take over your own government was blown to dust. In the end, Fawkes did you in, even if it was posthumously. The other details were supplied by Major Machita, who agreed to bury the hatchet with Colonel Zeigler long enough to put you away. As to my presence, I asked for and received the role of Master of Ceremonies because of my debt to Captain Fawkes." De Waal stared at Pitt, his features set in defeat. Then he turned to Zeigler.
"Joris, you arranged for my betrayal?"
"No man stands with a traitor." "If ever a man deserved to die, de Waal, it is you," said Machita. The hatred seemed to seep from his pores. De Waal ignored Machita.
You cannot simply execute a man of my station. The law demands a trial.
It is Prime Minister Kurtzman's wish that there be no scandal. Ziegler spoke without looking his chief in the eye. He suggested you die in the line of duty.
That would make me a martyr.
A tiny degree of confidence restored Duval's composure.
Can you see me as a martyr?
No, sir. That's why he agreed to my proposal that you turn up missing. Better you become a forgotten mystery than a national hero.
Too late, Duval caught the glint of steel as Machita's knife arched up between his groin and navel. The defense minister's eyes bulged in shock. He tried to speak. His mouth moved slackly, but the only sound that came was an animal-like gasp. A red stain spread across his uniform. Machita kept his hand on the knife's handle, watching death as it closed about Duval. Then, as the body sagged, Machita gave it a push backward, and Duval fell into the open grave. The three men walked to the edge and stood looking down as streams of dirt trickled and dropped on the figure sprawled below.
A fitting rest for his kind, Machita muttered. Ziegler's face was pale. He was hardened to seeing battlefield dead, but this was quite another thing.
I'll have the driver fill in the grave.
Pitt shook his head.
No need.
Fox made one final request in his log. I promised myself I'd see to it.
As you wish.
Ziegler turned to leave. Machita looked as if he were going to say something, thought better of it, and started toward the underbrush surrounding the cemetery.
Hold on, said Pitt. Neither of you can afford to waste this opportunity.
Opportunity, Ziegler said. After acting together to destroy a mutual cancer, it would be stupid not to stand face to face and discuss your differences.
A waste of words, Ziegler said contemptuously. Thomas Machita only speaks with violence.
Like all Westerners, Mr. Pitt, you are naive to our battle, Machita said, his face stoic. Talk cannot change what is meant to be. The racist South African government will fall to blacks in time.
You will pay dearly before your flag flies over Cape Town, said Ziegler.
Fool's mate, said Pitt.
You're both playing a fool's mate gambit.
Ziegler looked at him.
Perhaps in your eyes, Mr. Pitt. But to us it goes to a depth no outsider can fathom.
The colonel continued to his car, and Machita faded into the jungle. The truce was over. The chasm was too wide to be crossed. A wave of impotency mixed with anger swept Pitt.
What will it all matter 1,000 years from now? He shouted after them.
He picked up the shovel and, in a slow tempo, began scooping dirt into the grave. He could not bring himself to look at Duval. Soon he heard the splatter of dirt on dirt, and he knew no one would ever see the defense minister again. When he was finished and the mound was neatly shaped, he opened a box that lay on the grass beside the headstone and removed 4 flowering plants. These he carefully embedded in the soil at the corners of the Fox burial plot. Then he straightened and stepped back.
Rest well, Captain Fox. May you not be judged too harshly.
Feeling neither remorse nor sadness, but rather a kind of contentment, Pitt placed the empty box under one arm and the shovel over his shoulder and set a course for the village of Umkono. Behind him, the 4 bougainvillea plants arched their blossoms toward the African sun.